Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our discussion of the offense against the Kansas City Chiefs from that miserable, miserable game on Sunday. We got to do it. It's sometimes you just don't want to eat the liver you've been served, but that's what we got to do tonight. And here to join me with it, make it a little better, is Coach Evans of Sip to Tally Films. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Excited to talk about my favorite side of the football, which ain't been so favorite here lately, but I say that, and we're still averaging 30 some odd points. So maybe it's just the wins and losses that got me upset, but I'm ready to talk a little offensive football.
Sure. Well, that would do it for certain. So as always, kind of we look back at that first episode, talk about some of the things we talked about. Lots of good stuff. I mean, a lot of schematic things, a lot of things about the injuries and what should happen in a year like this where you know, five of now the last 21 seasons have been lost to injury. Beyond looking at anything you can to try and figure out if things can be different in terms of soft tissue injuries, are the reasons why you just can't avoid some of these things. I'm not sure there's, even if I believe that some of the hamstring injuries and other things could be avoided, I'm not sure I could believe that the Nnamdi Madubuike injury is the kind of thing that is ever on a coach or on a training staff. Maybe if they told him to do the wrong things, I guess always is possible, but.
Mm-hmm. His injury is so freakish because I even went and looked at like four or five plays before he stopped playing to see if I saw a moment where maybe he injured it. And the only thing I could even remotely think about was the block he laid on the lineman on Roquan's touchdown. That's the only play. And I mean, it could be something that happened, you know, because in the trenches, anything can happen, but that's the only what I would be considered violent strike, you know, prior to him going out. So, freak accidents, they do happen, and I wish him well, but the soft tissue issues are sometimes you train too hard, sometimes you don't train enough, sometimes you ain't eating right, sometimes you're eating too much of the wrong things. Mm-hmm. It's so many variables go into them, or you just could have overextended yourself, which is what I think happened in at least one case.
What bothers me more probably about what happened with the Madubuike injury is not that he's lost for the year, which is terrible in its own right. And it certainly will put the Ravens in a very, very tough spot, but it's the syntax that Harbaugh is using to discuss the injury. He can't tell us, which I understand. And mm-hmm. not just a matter of HIPAA, but he shouldn't tell us anyway for competitive reasons, but
right.
for HIPAA reasons, he definitely shouldn't tell us. But the other part of it is he's going to let Madubuike talk to us about what his future is when asked about the career-ending nature. That syntax, that's exactly what I heard when Steve Smith was retiring. I'm going to let him tell you what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that to me is very scary. It may mean Madubuike is in second and third opinion land. It may mean a lot of things, but I can't come up with anything in my head that is good in terms of what it means.
There's this real Zach Orish.
Yes.
For them not to, you know, and like you said, HIPAA and his personal whatever, I understand that, but just the tone of this, you know, makes me wonder if his last days of playing like football are upon us.
Yeah, it's so incredibly sad. And, you know, just Nnamdi has such a muscular upper area and neck, you'd never think this sort of injury specifically would happen to him. I mean, you think, and football players, you know, maybe people don't realize, they always think of them as lifting weights and squatting and whatever. They spend a lot of time exercising neck muscles to try and make that right. And boy, this is just, it's so sad. I'm afraid in the language we'll hear in Soviet, we may not hear till this off season, but we'll hear at some point, and it's I'm prepared for very, very bad news, I'm afraid.
Me as well.
We talked a little bit about Lamar's opportunity set, which was absolutely horrible. Coach made some points about they got the ball out quickly a fair amount, but maybe they should have gotten out even more quickly, particularly given how much the pressure was relating to opportunities. Lamar was actually getting to have ample time and space. We talked about a lot lighter boxes the Ravens are running. Coach talked about maybe trying to spread the field with 11 personnel, not necessarily just to throw the ball, but also to give the running back more space. We both have frustrations about Henry not having enough runs in the game. GameScript obviously was a part of this game. But at some point, the Ravens, and I think probably sooner than they did, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, maybe should have been trying to get the game over with the run a little more. And I wouldn't have a problem running Henry in that situation.
Yeah. And maybe you could have got out the game a little bit more healthier, but especially after you were down, what, 3 scores? Mm-hmm. It's at some point you got to chalk it up and be like, look, hey, we need to get out as healthy as possible. But I understand that, you know, whoever you have out there trying to play hard, you know, they get paid, they got pride. But sometimes you got to chalk it up. This ain't all day. Let's lick our wounds and go come back to fight next week.
We're recording this on Tuesday night, so we won't get the first injury report for the week until tomorrow, Wednesday, late afternoon. And one of the things that I believe has not been reported yet, but I believe is going to end up being true, is Teddy Buchanan sat out the fourth quarter of the game. It would be a little surprising to me if he's not hurt. It doesn't make any sense because obviously Buchanan, one of the reasons he's got a lot of playing time to date has been because he's the obvious replacement to me anyway for Roquan if anything were to happen to him. Now, something has happened to Roquan. I really would be wanting to make sure he was as ready as possible to take over that Mike role in the coming weeks. And having him sit out the fourth quarter, I really just don't think it makes a lot of sense. But they had Jake Hummel out there. They had, mm-hmm. Trying to get him more snaps out of Simpson. And today they worked out Kendricks, the ex linebacker. So it certainly looks like they might have more happening at that inside linebacker position than we know about.
Yeah, it's scary to, for one, have Buchanan take Trenton's job, and then he have to come in and perform the job of the guy that's supposed to be teaching him because he going out. So it's, you look at that, and I know we hit talking offense, but you just scan that defense. It's a lot of rookies playing some important snaps that ain't fairly good.
Yeah, and they may have to turn to a player like Jay Higgins and get some quality play out of him. Now, they're mm-hmm. looking to the street, and I'm not surprised that they're looking for someone with a little more experience, but they do have Chandler Martin still in the practice squad who had a great preseason and would be mm-hmm. an interesting player to get going at some point in the second half, particularly if the season starts to unravel on the Ravens. And we hope it doesn't happen, but if that is the route of it, and hey, we all know that's a possibility at this point, then getting a look at as many of these rookies and young players. TJ Tampa's a second-year player who hasn't got a lot of playing time. Keon Martin mm-hmm. is a guy who's looked pretty darn good. At least, you know, the one thing that really stands out to me about Keon Martin is how hard he's playing right now.
Yeah.
Not always in the right space. Somebody can kind of lost between spots, but he's playing really hard. You see the same thing from Tavius. That guy never, he doesn't have enough.
Love speed. Tavius. Yeah. Love Tavius. Loved. I even see the same type of energy from TJ Tampa when he get his limited opportunities.
Well, it's great, and I hope Tampa is physically up to the task of playing outside corner. I mean, there is a real question about Tampa's speed being on the inflection point at corner isn't really when you're a 435 corner versus a 445 corner. Those guys can all cover and potentially can do a great job. The inflection point is between about 4.5 and 4.6. At 4.6, mm-hmm. you can't be an NFL corner, not really. And Tampa's at 4.59, you're coming out of school. And at 4.5, you can play the position and your prospects are pretty good. But in between there is where the real drop-off, I think, is in terms of what you can expect out of a young corner.
His technique at 4.59 has to be superb.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was something, you know, when you go back to his time in college, he had a lot of games he would play with receivers on the outside to try and, you know, punch him and tug at him in a way that wasn't going to get called every time. And, you know, do some of the Ike Taylor stuff where he really guides him towards the sideline. I was very attracted to him as a prospect. I had him mm-hmm. as my number 6 corner on the entire board. Wiggins was one. And those two guys, the Ravens got both. I was ecstatic about it. And Wiggins, you know, just distraught about the loss there of a great young defensive player being lost. Mm-hmm.
That could have been one of them licking my wound losses and getting your guys out of there. That could have been one of those guys. But the hit off TJ Tampa real quick, his arms are another asset. The kid stands straight up and his fingertips are almost at his calves. Mm-hmm. His arms really help out. And, you know, being a 4.59 guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he needs to press to be effective, or he needs to have that as an option, at least in the toolkit, to make up for some of those limitations, no doubt about it. All right, I think we'll move on now. We'll talk about some offensive line play, as we always do to start off the second half of the show. You know, this is a game of paradoxes, and this is a game where they had one offensive line player who was not up to the game physically, and that was Ronnie Stanley. Came out very quickly, but frankly was responsible for a lot of the early pressure in the game and a lot of the pressures on Lamar. Had his hand in the first four of the pressures were at least part Ronnie Stanley, which we can talk about a little bit. But he played 15 snaps. He doesn't get a grade for less than 20 snaps, but I'll tell you how bad it was. He scored negative 0.5 plays. No, sorry, negative 0.5 points on 15 snaps, which is a negative 0.03 score on the what theoretically could be a 0 to 100 score, but you can't actually score negative. So it's what if it would have been the worst game of his career if it had been done over a qualifying number of snaps. I'll count it. I don't blame Ronnie at all for it all. I think the pressure must have been tremendous from the coaches who watched his workout to try and get him to play. And that is one thing. I hope the Ravens are extremely careful about the rest of this season. They're obviously going to be kind of hunting on the fringe of the playoffs, kind of from your best case, or a fairly good case scenario has them hunting on the fringe of the playoffs for either a backdoor AFC North title or maybe the last wild card. That's kind of a best case scenario now. So there'll be pressure for a lot of players to play when in truth, they probably the best decision for some of them is going to be sit out some of these games.
I agree. And him, I think it was the first play of the game where you see him hit tweak that ankle or whatever. And I started watching him later on, and he was giving, trying to fight, but giving. And it's like he had lost his strength in there. So I can see why his numbers are where they are. He's to the point where he was more of a hindrance being out there than a help trying to be a fight. Because you don't expect your number one guy to be your worst guy. That's a guy you got to depend on and not have to worry about it. Because you got, you know, other guys up there that are not as solid. So with him being in that situation, I understand. Hopefully it's not long term. But with it being the same ankle, it's cause for concern.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely cause for concern. So the first four pressures on Lamar, I'll go through these really quickly. So the fourth play of the game, they had a pressure on a 21-yard pass, but there's a quarterback hit by Chris Jones. Jones goes right through a double team from Voorhees and Stanley. I just gave it each to them equally on that play. Two plays later, a pass for 6 yards. He's bulled by Omenihu for the second pressure. Third pressure came on the first play of the next drive. I have him giving up 2/3 of that sack. So he was bowled by Omenihu. Jackson moved up, maybe could have thrown the ball, but the damage was really done. There wasn't a lot of room in the pocket for him to get rid of the football safely. So I had that 2/3 on him and 1/3 on Jackson. Two plays later, he got beaten inside by Jones, who also steamrolled Hill on the play. But that ended up, Lamar ran them out of the pressure for a 12-yard play. So how I'd score that is Stanley gets a 0 on the play, but it's a 0 R that negatively impacts his subjective adjustment for the game. So, Lamar obviously got him out of a big hole on that play where he allowed a pressure. And then on the next pressure, which was three plays after that, they had a 17-yard pass. He was bowled by Omenihu again for a solo pressure. And then the very next play, it wasn't his pressure. It was an unblocked pressure on the interception that was thrown up down the right sideline. So then Stanley was out of the game at that point. So you can see it was basically him who gave up the first, set of pressures that the Ravens allowed in this game. It was a lot, frankly, of the total pressure problem they had with pressure in the game.
Ronnie just he has to be part of the solution going forward. If we lose him, I really feel like if we lose Ronnie, that's going to be one of the guys that would make me get in the doom and gloom box, because he's one of the guys I feel like you got to have, because we can't replace what he gives us consistently. And no boom can go out there and play, whatever. Maybe you activate Carson and he go and give you what he can give you, but none of them together will give you the consistency of Ronnie Stanley.
Completely agree. And We were so positive on the Ravens getting a good hometown discount on Stanley this offseason. I think he really did the Ravens a solid to sign for what he did. I think there was more money out there elsewhere. I hope that he's able to come back and play this year, certainly next year, and solidifies any question about his Ring of Honor status, because I think that's something he richly deserves as a Raven. And he's really been through hell for this team in terms of the injuries and all the rehab he's done. People, you know, we don't give athletes credit for rehabbing, but it's a long process. It's a lot of hours they spend doing it. It's a lot of, you know, in part boredom, probably in some cases some pain at trying to work through that. Certainly pain from the injuries, but also to rehab and try and make that tissue right again.
Yeah, I agree, because the rehab process, you have to go through pain to be painless. Mm-hmm. All those little nicks and whatever, just getting your range of motion back. You know, if you go from 45 to 55, when you pressing that crap hurts. And so to do that on a daily basis and get it to the point where you eventually get your whole range of motion back, you finally get to running or lifting or doing whatever, then you get to the point where you can get back on the field. And in some cases, some people are better after rehab. It's an amazing process.
Think about it from this way, all you kind of sedentary guys out there, and I know there are a lot of them who are just like me who had frozen shoulder at some point in their life, and you just the rehab from that, just not being able to take your shirt off at night and without help from your wife, and you know, the pain you have during that. I mean, I understand I'm being a complete sissy for it, but that rehab process is a pain in the ass. So having a real injury is going to be a lot more serious than that.
That makes me think about all the stuff JK's went through, and for him to still be thriving.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's certainly been through as much as anybody in a short career here. As one of the things Ray talked about at the end was he couldn't go through another rehab in terms of doing what he'd done. So anyway, hopefully this isn't the end for Ronnie. Hopefully he'll be back. And I think I gave you the scoring already. There's no grade from this game. So we'll move on and talk about Joe Noteboom, who replaced him a little bit. Who replaced him for the last 38 snaps, not just a little bit. He actually played pretty well. And I was very, very negative on the likelihood that Noteboom would play well this year if he was asked to be there. He's a little long in the tooth in this league, but he had a good game. He had 38 plays he was in. He made 35 of his blocks. The only ones he missed were ones that became pressure events. So he gave up 1.25 pressures. You ask, how do you give up a quarter pressure? Well, he and Voorhees had a double team that got split, and then there was also a free runner on the play. So the free runner was half of it, and then he split the other half with Voorhees. He also gave up a full quarterback hit himself. Scored 0.78 per play, which certainly is not bad if you're talking about what you can get from a replacement for your left tackle. And it got a B for the game. Didn't have any level 2 blocks, no pancakes, no pulls, no highlights. And frankly, he can score 0.82 per game and get a B. He's fine with me. He doesn't have to do any of that stuff.
I'm 100% agreeance with you. Right before you made that last sentence, I was going to say, if you give me that for the next next game or two, I'll take it. I take my chances with that, because that's you're not calling the offensive lineman's name. He's doing what he needs to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So I agree. And if, you know, one of the real pleasant surprises of this game was Noteboom's play. All right, let's move on and talk about Voorhees. Now, Voorhees started the season terribly. And the way I'll say this, and I have not told you, Coach, I have told the listeners on this pod a fair amount, but Voorhees' first two games of the year were three points below a passing level, which is a worse two-game series than Fa'alele had at any time last year. And Fa'alele's first 14 games last year were terrible. You know, he was at a D level overall, but he still never was over two games as bad as Voorhees was in that first two. So he had a big hole to dig himself out of. Mm-hmm. And these last two games have actually been pretty good for him. I thought he was one of the guys who was pretty good here. And yeah, the Ravens don't have an ideal situation at guard. They're trying to save money more than that. They're trying to answer the question, I think, where do I not spend money as a GM in order to fund a lot of very other expensive players?
Mm-hmm.
And Voorhees in this game made 48 out of 53 blocks. He missed two. Both of them were losses at the line of scrimmage. He gave up a quarter of pressure. I mentioned that was shared with Noteboom earlier. And then he gave up 1.5 quarterback hits. One of them shared with Stanley on a double team beaten by Jones. So, you know, a good game overall. 81 was his raw score. He had a small adjustment in that too. Middle of the B range for Voorhees at 0.85 overall. Had three level two blocks. He had one pancake, and he had two nice highlight plays. And I'm trying to remember what his highlights looked like here because I'm not looking at my article right away to remember. By the way, taking a moment here, I want to thank my wife for all the work she's done on the offensive line scoring over the years. But recently, and I haven't been able to get the offensive line article out in, I tell you what is impressive by Lois. I haven't been able to get the offensive line article out in a timely fashion. It's been coming out late Wednesday. It's going out early Thursday, and that's too late for people to be excited about it. But Maureen retired on September 5th, and now she's kind of working more or less full-time on things related to this podcast and the effort. So she's been just wonderful in terms of what she's done on this. Now, Voorhees got a great push off the line of scrimmage on Jones, pushed him 5 yards on a run play. I think Jones was really expecting a pass. He might have gotten too high to try and make a swim move or other over-the-shoulder move, and Voorhees moved him right off the line of scrimmage and got a 5-yard push for one of his two highlights. So that was nice.
With Voorhees, I feel like all the tool set is there. He just needs the reps. Because I was talking about this maybe Monday. This is the most football Voorhees has played in about 4 years. Because, you know, he got hurt. Then we drafted him hurt. Then he came back after being hurt, won a starting job, got hurt after game three or four, and then didn't get the job back again until this year. So 4 games of football is the most Voorhees has played in 3-4 years. So I can see him being a guy that can help us. I just need a bigger a picture, sample. Bigger sample to look at, because this is the most in a long time, and I need to see him be consistent for, you know, 14, 15, 16 weeks. And this is a start. If he's played bad, I feel like he learned from the mistakes, play better the next 2 games, because these first 6 games have really been some of the best football teams in NFL. So if you start low, you just work your way up. Best football at the end of the year, you're good in my book.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I look at Voorhees as a second-year player. In a lot of ways, I wish kind of Ajabo had gotten the same full-season NFI treatment, and then we might look at him differently right now in terms of what our expectations were. It might still not work out for David Ajabo. I mean, he might have been caught next camp as a fourth-year player. But I don't see him as having a future with the Ravens right now after what's happened the last 2 weeks, when the Ravens are in the most dire need of outside linebacker help. He comes back and he plays 6 and then 18 snaps. I don't think he's in the Ravens' plans.
Agreed. 100% agree.
So Voorhees, anyway, a B for the game. So, you know, honestly, pretty happy about that. And I think it's easy with a second-year player. That was the point I was trying to get to, was it's easy to project improvement on a player like that. They have him for 2 more years. If they want him, admittedly, they might draft a replacement for him. They might find a replacement for him. But I think he's actually earned himself a little bit of leash with these last 2 weeks, in terms of he has the right to fail, certainly at least through the bye week, and I would think probably beyond that. But even if he were to cave in again these next 2 weeks, I think he'll make it through those 2 games before they replace him if he went back to the first 2 weeks of the year.
Agreed. Never mind. We might talk about it later. I don't want to jump the gun. I'll wait and see if we talk about it. I'll write it down and see if we talk about it.
All right. A lot of the people, by the way, in terms of what you're writing down, are looking at these grades that I'm going to give you on the offensive line, and they're saying, how can this be true when Lamar overall only had 2 ample time and space opportunities, and he was pressured 10 times? This doesn't compute. I can't put this together. I can only say a lot of it was game plan related, and some of it was free runner related. Some of it was the effect of the spy was very heavily on Jackson, weighed very heavily on Jackson. And obviously, what they did with their 4-man rush was very effective in terms of getting some coverage sacks and some sacks that didn't take a long time to get there, but the coverage held up for long enough to allow them to get it done. So, you know, it is, I think the aggregate results are going to be a little bit surprising to some people. Although if you've seen the article already, then you already know.
What some people don't realize is you can have a bad game as an offensive lineman, but individuals on that line can have a good game.
Sure.
And that's looks like the case going here. You know, looking at it, hey, did terrible. But there are some good spots in there. And the thing is, the one sack you give up may be your one bad play of the game, and you may still grade out at 90.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you on that. So anyway, we'll talk about Linderbaum a little bit now. Linderbaum's had a tough year in some ways, but he had a decent bounce back game in week three. And in week four here, had another kind of a difficult pass blocking game, 53 plays, made 48 of his blocks, missed two. Those two misses were both losses at the line of scrimmage. Let me make sure of that. Actually, I'm not looking at it right now, but I believe they're both losses at the line of scrimmage. He allowed one pressure, two-thirds of a quarterback hit. Now, Coach and I have looked at this film together. I've talked to PFF about it, and is one of the very, very rare plays, maybe one out of 200 or so, where it's not 100% clear exactly who's got to be doing what. A lot of people will tell you, by the way, you can't know the assignment, so you couldn't possibly know how to grade that play. This is that one very odd play where that might actually be true. Most of the time, you know the assignment from both what the player does, from the cues they give you after the fact that are on tape there, from all kinds of information that is given, from who talks to them after the play, from whatever might occur. In this case, I really can't tell, and I just watched it with Coach, and I think we're kind of in the same spot. I talked to PFF about it. I know how they graded it. I ended up going with effectively what PFF's grading was, and it was the play with on fourth and one where Bolton came through for the pressure, and Karloftis then got the quarterback hit. But Bolton came through the right A gap between Linderbaum and Fa'alele. Linderbaum and Voorhees were left of the action, double teaming, not Jones, but the other interior defender there. And I don't remember who that was, because Fa'alele was soloed up on Chris Jones and doing an okay job until Bolton came in. Then Bolton came in and Fa'alele jumped to try and protect on the inside. He just jumped way too late. And that meant not only had he released Jones, which actually didn't cause any problem on that play, but he was too late to get to Bolton. And it, from PFF's viewpoint, and I can be convinced of this, that Linderbaum, because he was on a double team, should have been the guy to come peel off and do that. And Coach noticed one other thing I want to let you talk about in terms of how Voorhees was acting on the other side.
Okay. First of all, the other defensive tackle was Nottie, Derek Nottie. And but when that play first starts, you see Voorhees put his hands either on Linderbaum's shoulder or in the area of Linderbaum. And in my eyes, thinking maybe telling him to slide over, because it was five open, so their five versus our five, and because he didn't have a guy to block, and so I feel like he was pushing Tyler over to like maybe slide that way and pick up that next gap, because if they do that, not saying they stop the pressure, but at least they have a hat on a hat, and then you don't have a free runner, and then Fa'alele having to pick and choose which guy to block now. I will say this in Fa'alele's defense, and all the football I've known or taught, if it's two guys coming, you take the innermost guy. And in this case, he attempted to get Bolton, who was the innermost guy. But being indecisive allowed both of those guys to be free, and it ended up not working out well for us.
Yeah, indecisive and a little slow. I got to go back to what you said about Voorhees and that right-hand thing. That's something I normally look at on guards. When there's a guard bubble, meaning the guard does not have an obvious guy to block, and the nose tackle typically is engaging the center directly, they'll often try and maintain good spacing while keeping their eyes downfield by keep putting their right hand on the shoulder, or usually shoulder, of the center next to them. And then they kind of get a feel of whether or not that player might jump into their A gap, where they then have to do something about it. But a lot of times they're just maintaining their spacing. It's something I observed years ago with Ben Cleveland when he was just getting through college at Georgia. He did a good job, I thought, of keeping that spacing good. So it may have meant he needed to move over there. It may have just been mechanism for him to maintain that space without having to use his eyes to do it. Try and see where
they and go. I think they do a lot of that. So it could have been that as well. But, you know, who knows? Like we said earlier, we don't know we ain't in the room. We don't know the call. But I feel like that could have been him saying, "Hey, slide, slide, slide," and he just didn't get it, because the nose did take Linderbaum straight down the middle. He didn't pick a side. He went straight down the middle.
So in the case of Linderbaum here, I went with PFF and how they did. I gave him two-thirds of that quarterback hit. A third is also on Rosengarten, because he was breaking down to the outside there. And I gave Falele a missed block on the play. By the way, here's what I tell you about my scoring system. If you don't believe that's true, then make the change yourself. It's easy. You give a minus two to Falele in terms of points, and Falele would have been a D in that case, and Linderbaum would have been a B in terms of scoring. It would have made that much of a difference because both of them were kind of on the boundary of their letter grade. So you can think of this as a C slash D for Falele and as a B slash C for Linderbaum if you want to. But I think I went with that. I'm 75% confident I went in the right direction in this case, but not 100.
I got you on that.
All right. So 1/3 of a sack by Linderbaum. I gave him that on the play where Lamar fumbled and the ball got away because Linderbaum kind of inexplicably thought it was a good idea to lay his shoulder into Lamar to try and protect him from a player when obviously that wasn't an optimal move. And he ended up causing the fumble. No sack was awarded to any Kansas City player on that play. Mm-hmm. So the ball was just loose and picked up. Anyway, 42 points overall for Linderbaum and 0.79 per play, which is 82 after adjustment. He did also get run out of a pressure where he allowed it and Lamar ran for a 3-yard gain anyway. So that would have been a minus two if it had been an incomplete pass, say, that Lamar had thrown the ball away. He made 7 level two blocks, had 1 pancake. I know what else I want to ask you about, Coach. He had 2 plays in this game that are like pulls I've never seen before, but both of his pulls, which by the way, were the only 2 pulls executed by the Ravens at any point in this you had that in there?
Landed on pull.
Yeah. So this, go ahead. Let's talk about it. This 2 spin pull moves. So Baltimore football fans going way back will remember Glenn Ressler's block on John Mackey's touchdown in Super Bowl V. And it's one of the ones that's featured in the Super Bowl film that year, but he spun out and picked up one of the Cowboys' ends, I believe, with an unbelievable block that gave Unitas enough time to get the ball off where so it could be tipped by one receiver, then touched by Renfro, and then fall into the hands of Mackey for one of the luckiest touchdowns in Super Bowl history. But it was an unbelievable block by Glenn Ressler. But this is 2 spin pulls in the same game. I have not seen this from the Ravens, and both were on pass plays where he's like basically moving out to be the left tackle on the play.
That's why I wrote it down to ask. I was going to ask you, you know, because I saw the pulls on here, and I didn't know where he was going to go with it, but. Do you like it or do you not like it? I think it's kind of ingenious for his skill set.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Everybody can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think he's one of the people who could do it. Unfortunately, he allowed a pressure on one of those two. But I think he is a player who could pull that off, and it gives you a chance to do that. But I cannot remember ever seeing that. I mean, I've scored every block the last 20 years. I cannot remember that ever occurring. And because the first time I thought, oh, he just got off balance. And then he did it again. And I said, that had to be by design. Yep. It didn't make any sense. So I wonder if we'll see that more this year. If they look at it and they say, okay, that's something we can work with. Sure, it didn't work out this game, but we don't have a lot of options to move somebody over to that side who can make a reasonable pass pickup, you know, over there.
Another question about Linderbaum's pulls. There are outside zone plays where he overtakes the guard, and if
scoop,
you know what I mean? Yeah. How do you feel about them implementing that? Because all the football I've coached, those guards have to do a certain job. And for Lindy to have to go behind them and then move up. That's asking him to do a whole lot.
So it's happened a couple times earlier this year where Falele has made what is basically a cutoff block going backwards. Okay, so cutoff block going backwards, reach block going forwards towards the play side. Okay, so they'll ask Falele, who's very limited physically, to make a cutoff block, which this is, I think, is genius. Play to his strengths, make a cutoff block on the backside, and then get Linderbaum moving around him to try and find someone. He might not find someone right at the line of scrimmage. You probably hope he doesn't, because that's going to be a difficult reach block if the player is there. But he might be able to, once he gets into the hole, he's all kinds of dangerous in terms of making an L2 block or cutting off a linebacker or whatever pursuing player might be on that side, being able to cut up. I do like it. I think it's making use of the talents of both players, because I think Falele being limited and the more athleticism out of Linderbaum, I think they're leaning into it.
Yeah, because Falele just, but like, and we all crap on him, but he just can't physically get to some L2 players. He's his DNA. He's not fast enough to get there. It's nothing he did wrong. He just too big and not fast enough, not quick enough. No matter what angle he takes, he just can't get there. And so for them to do that and have Linderbaum as a more space or L2 player, I like them doing that.
Yeah, I'm with you all the way. So anyway, a C for Linderbaum. And again, if you believe he shouldn't have been charged with that quarterback hit, then you could think of this as a B game from him. Falele, we'll go through his stuff. He actually, in aggregate, was not bad at all, but he had some spectacularly bad plays, which has kind of been the natural thing for Falele. So 53 plays, 48 blocks. He missed two, one penetration. So he had... One of the big frustrating early plays in this game was the third and one where Henry lost a yard and Linderbaum just got rolled over. Sorry, not Linderbaum. Falele got rolled over on that play into the backfield. And let me make sure if I have this right on the when this was. So, yeah, it was. Yeah, it was on third and one. It's actually the first play of Q4. So the game was pretty much over at this point. But he was bulled, then pancaked by Chris Jones. And Jones is the one who then gets in the backfield and takes down Henry for a loss of one on the play. It wouldn't matter. It would be the same if he just blew up that play. But caused a negative play in the run game on that one. He had one pressure allowed. And then he had the play on the fumble by Lamar. So he basically allowed a pressure on that play, but he also had a holding flag thrown. He can only get one of those two scores. The pressure would be a negative two, or it would have been a third of a sack, actually. But the holding call is a minus five. And why is the holding call worse? Well, the holding call has optionality associated with it. And obviously, if it were a full sack, it would be minus six, or even a two-thirds of a sack would be minus four. But the point is that the optionality of that hold would have really hurt the Ravens if they had recovered the fumble. So only possible to give them one score on that play. So I went with a minus five for the offensive holding. Works out to 0.74 per play with an adjustment. He's a C, and he's kind of towards the lower end of that C. So he would have dropped if that quarterback hit was more assigned to him. Just ended up giving him a missed block on that play. Four blocks in level two, two pancakes, and three highlight blocks. Now, some of those highlights, and I know you noticed them, came on that first series.
Mm-hmm. I agree. One of his two best blocks ever I've seen came in that first series. I don't know where that Falele is hiding, but if that guy shows up, he could be a real force.
So this is a game, you know, one of Falele's kind of characteristics we've seen game after game is an inability to consistently connect on level two blocks. So he gets out to level two. He's oftentimes a wasted man, and it's multiple things that are hitting him. One is decisiveness, because that's been a problem of his. And the second is he's slow, lumbering player, but he does have good length. And if he can get out into level two, I think the main thing he needs to do is be a large monument sized object that strikes fear into smaller players, which is every other player on the field, trying to run through him. And if he could just maintain his legs doing that, and he could be much more effective in level two. I mean, no cornerback wants to try and slip a block from Daniel Falele. They want to go completely around him.
Right.
So use that, you know, have that as a way. But he made four out of four blocks in level two in this game, which was unusual. He's missed a lot of level two blocks as a hefty component of his missed blocks. since he moved to guard at the beginning of last year.
He's incrementally gotten better at some things. While we want him to be probably further along than he is now, it's as bad as he is, it's tough to give him flowers for when he plays good because his losses are so loud. But I'll take him, you know, because he's going to play. We all know he's going to play. Incrementally getting better, just as long as he's getting better, because when he misses, it's loud and it's obvious. And it's, at least if you miss a block or you do something wrong, at least go find somebody to hit him. He'll stand there and look around, and that makes whatever he did wrong initially looks 10 times worse.
Have you ever had a player like him that you were coaching on offense who you just wish they'd be a little more physical? They're the biggest guy on the field. You know, you've got him at an offensive line play. They've got some decent length to them. You know, just finish a block. My God, take a guy to the ground.
Yeah. And the thing is, what keeps you putting them out there is they'll flash it every now and then. And you just, as a coach, you feel like you can tap into it. You're like, I just got to unlock it, and then he'll do it all the time. And sometimes it don't happen.
All right. So Daniel Faalele'a C in this game. Let's move over to the right side where Roger Rosengarten did have a good game. 53 plays, 48 blocks, 3 missed. A third of a quarterback hit. That was on the play where either Faalele'a or Linderbaum would have gotten the other two-thirds. A big problem with Rosengarten was an illegal formation penalty that happened. He lined up way off the line of scrimmage. We might have talked about this in the first show or in the break. I'm not sure which, but he lined up way off the line of scrimmage and got a very legitimate illegal formation call. It wasn't like the Ronnie Stanley week one last year calls against the Chiefs. This was a, it was unfortunate, and it ended up costing the Ravens in terms of a 17-yard reception that got wiped off the board.
These pre-snap penalties, man, they irk me so much. These alignments, false starts, man, you the closest person to the ball. Watch the ball. You're lined up in the same spot almost every time because you don't want to give away anything by doing something different on a different play. Line up in the same spot. Pre-snap stuff right here, that I understand why it burns folks up, because it's to me, it's mental. Effort penalties, you know, they happen. Holding when somebody's about to whoop you, or hands to the face when you're trying to position your hands, that stuff happens because that's effort. The pre-snap stuff, that's all cerebral, man. You got to be locked in as a pro. You got to cut them things out, because every little detail will hurt. Even though we're doing better at penalties, but every little penalty will hurt.
They spent so much time at camp working on this. Every day they would go to what I call set and snap drills. And you've been around a lot of football. I don't know how much you coach this at the time, but the whole goal of this was to be able to play with a diverse set of cadences. So they get to the line of scrimmage. They don't even wear the helmets for the drill. They just throw the helmets on the side. So all it is basically get to the huddle, get the play car, get to the line of scrimmage as quickly as possible, get set, go to your motion, get the snap off, and get out of your stance quickly as you can. And that the last part's important, because otherwise they just sit in their stance and they'd sit back on their foot and they wouldn't ever give up a false start. But they have to try and get off quickly as well, and that's what they're watching for on film. They did it every single day of camp. And they worked so hard on it, and then they were still having a lot of false starts during the preseason. They've done a better job during the regular season. But I'm waiting for how this is going to help the team with what they learn from the defense pre-snap in terms of giveaways, and also what they are able to do to slow down an opposing defense that's basically coming out of sprinters' blocks from those as edge rushers. And I don't know that I've seen it yet. But I wanted to ask you, as a coach, did you ever practice that for like an extended period, really practice getting your cadence right with a day after day drill like that?
We did not, but on our level, it doesn't get that deep. You can go from on one and on two for the most part. If you mix that up, you good. On their level, I understand what they were trying to do, because you don't want the edge rushers to get an even more advantage of knowing your cadence and getting jumps on your tackles. I felt like at the time they were doing it, that was the right time to do it. But at some point, if it wasn't working within 2, maybe 3 weeks, you got to can it, because you can't let it cost you games. So I feel like they were working on it at the right time. But if they still didn't pick it up, either you coached it wrong or they just can't get it. And I refuse to say they just can't get it. You just got to figure out a way to teach it to 25-ish different players.
Yeah.
That's what they pay you the big bucks for.
Yeah. And they were all in on this. They were going with a times two sets of offense and defensive formations at each end of the field to try and get as many players, just like you're talking about, assigned. So they, you know, Cooper and Lamar were each running an offense on the opposite sides of the field. So twos and threes are learning this. They even have enough players that they're making substitutions on a simulated basis on each side of the field to try and get new players in. They had a coach who was acting as a kind of, I guess you'd call it a defensive overhang player who might be a slot corner, who might come on a blitz, who's moving around and who's presenting the opposing quarterback with the need to make checks and whatnot. I mean, they sold out to do this thing. And I really expected it to pay dividends, but obviously I don't really know that we've seen it so far. Maybe Monken, you know, if he were here talking to us, would say, look, we scored over 30 points a game. I attribute six of that to the fact that we're getting our cadence right here. I don't know.
Hey, analytic advantage will help, but you got to use that as an advantage. It can't be a crutch. And I want to go back to Rosengarten. I finally found the play. Yeah, he's way off.
Yeah,
he's way off.
There you go. So anyway, A minus for the game for Rosengarten. Six level two blocks. He's shown pretty decent mobility. Made a really big block on Henry's touchdown run against the Lions, getting out into level two, and had one pancake in this game. No pulls, no highlights. But anyway, that's the offensive line, and it's just an unusual, paradoxical game. They didn't miss a lot of blocks in this game because the Kansas City presented them with lots of players to block. And often, you know, occasionally anyway, one too many. And then, of course, Ronnie Stanley did have a terrible game and was responsible for a fair amount of the pressure, not to his own – nothing we can really blame Stanley for. He really wanted to be out there and try and give it a go in this game, and they probably pressured him to do it, frankly, too, to be out there for a game like this. All right, let's move on and talk about some skill position players. Coach, who would you like to talk about?
Rashad Bateman. I started with Rashad Bateman. I really expected more out of Rashad Bateman. I felt like I even predicted that he'd hit 1,200 yards this year, because thinking like his route running set, he'd be higher in the progressions this year. I just thought we'd be like a more on-time team. That hasn't panned out over the first couple weeks. I think a reset comes for him because of Cooper Rush being a quarterback. I think Cooper Rush is a more on-time guy, which I think Bateman is our most on-time receiver, if that makes sense. The other guys can be on time, but they're more of improvising. I think Bateman runs the route, whatever the route is. He's at the point when you tell him to be there. And if you throw it at that point, if y'all in sync in that point, I think Bateman's your guy. Now, you know, second, third, and scramble drill type stuff, everybody else I think is better than him at that, even though he can have some success at it. But I'm really disappointed at the usage, the targets, and the production of Rashad Bateman so far. But I think with Cooper Rush going into the game, it provides a different task for him. And the team, the offensive team, is totally different. So I think it's an opportunity for him to get on track.
Yeah, that's a great point, because I think he probably is the player who can benefit the most. I mean, one of the players who I'm afraid is going to suffer is Flowers. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Lamar has hit him on a lot of crossing routes that are a little bit slower developing and take time for him to beat his guy. But when he beats his guy with separation crossing, no one can really cover Flowers doing that. It's not that he runs great mounts. It's not like he's playing anything but his own cards as a poker player, but he gets to the top of the route and he sticks his foot in the ground and goes left or right. And there's just no one who can stick with him. With Bateman, he's got real wiggle. He sells something to the opposing corner at the top of the stem. And I agree, he can run all sorts of things off there. I wonder if, because of who Cooper Rush is in terms of mobility, if we're going to lose a lot of the deep shot value of those guys, of Tez Walker, for example, even of Hopkins. You know, some of Hopkins' plays take longer time to develop for him to get an obvious one-on-one situation where Lamar at least felt very comfortable throwing him the football and he'd just go up and get it. I'm really concerned about what having a offense scheme to throw short is going to mean, because we've seen it with Tyler Huntley and just how difficult that was for the Ravens.
I think the skill set is different between those two guys. I think Cooper has shown you that he can at least run an offense, not necessarily be extremely effective and win a bunch of games, but he's shown you that he can win you a game or two and run a offense if the skill guys around him, you know, take on a bigger role. And we have a skill set around him that I feel like can do that. Derrick Henry, Justice Hill, Zay Bateman, yeah, Likely's back, Mark Andrews. I feel like you got enough guys around Cooper to be efficient on offense. He just got to make the right reads. Plays have to be called to amplify his skill set and just realize that we can't treat him as if he's Lamar's backup. And I mean like a clone of Lamar. If that's, right. if that's what you're going to think, you might as well play Snoop.
Well, I mean, Huntley wasn't a clone of Lamar either. He just doesn't present the same sort of a credible run threat. He's a straight line player where Lamar is a third gear Ferrari of a runner. You know, so it's a completely different player. And I do think that they'll adapt to that with Monken. I think Monken has played with more of those kind of quarterbacks, certainly at all levels, but certainly at the college level, where he's had to make do with less athletic guys.
Yeah, and that's right in his skill set. If I'm not mistaken, you got both your tight ends back. You got a quarterback that's not as mobile, but should be, you know, ready to get rid of the ball to the first available open person. And so that should be the skill set to go out there and do that and be successful. And if you can sustain drives, help your defense out a little bit, you're going to have a chance.
All right. That's a great pick for the first one. I'll tell you, I'm going to pick a player who's off the board here, but I want to talk about Lucas Scott because he looked pretty darn good in the preseason, I thought, as a blocker. Not perfect, but, you know, looked like he could do many of the things that Ricard could done. Ricard is now hurt, an unknown re-entry date, but the guy hasn't practiced in 6 weeks now. I think as far as I would see the read the tea leaves right now, there's a pretty good chance Ricard is not back next year. It's just getting to a point in his life where the injuries may have become too much of a factor. He had both hips at times. We've always speculated about the end being sooner than it was. They've got a 290-pound former offensive tackle who seems to fit the mold of Ricard as a fullback in a lot of ways. Was brought in for exactly that reason, not drafted. The one chip in Ricard's favor is he's still very cheap because you can pay him the veteran salary benefit money and he only counts the minimum vet minimum against the cap. But other than that, I mean, I'm struggling hard to find out why they shouldn't be giving Lucas Scott a chance now and why Mitchell Payton is getting it over him. And Mitchell Payton, he hasn't been bad. He just doesn't fit the prototype kind of tight end fullback that I think the Ravens have had.
Yeah, when this first popped off, I really thought Scott was going to be the guy to come in and do that. And the only thing I can see is because I did see Mitchell Palin in some traditional tight end spots this week. I figure hands may be an option in that if they had to throw it to him. Athleticism, Mitchell Palin probably has that. Just straight up headbanging, I would say Scott may have that, but they probably, you know, value those other aspects over what Scott has. And like you said, Mitchell Palin has thrown his body around and been a key lead block on some positive plays that we've had. So I've been surprised at him. I really thought Scott would have been that guy, but for them to get what they're getting out of Mitchell Palin, I'm content with it. But Scott does fit the mold of Ricard. He's like a body double almost.
Yeah. I want to say one more thing about Mitchell Payton before we move on here, and that is that he's not a young man. He turned 26 in August. So he's been around on practice squads with Cleveland for years. Might have had another stop as well, but he played an unbelievable numbers, like over 400 preseason snaps before he played his first NFL snap. That is really tough to do. The one guy who's got a chance to be up in that level is Carson Vinson now. He would have to basically get the same kind of workload next preseason that he got this preseason, and he'd pretty much be there. Yeah. Your turn.
Derrick Henry. I think with the early fumbling woes, this is a guy that really does not strike me as it's going to be a problem. I think he's going to do everything in his power to put the team on his back. Hey, give me 20, 25, 30 carries and let's go work. Because especially with Lamar going down, He probably, you know, I from what I see out of Derek, he's probably still kind of perturbed about the fumbles, because at the time they happened, they were crucial times. Mm-hmm. So I feel like he can take this, or probably would try to use this as a, hey, I screwed up early. This is my time to do something good, to contribute, and show that, you know, I'm still a guy. I'm a part of a machine, but I'm still a guy, and I can get it done when I need to get it done. And I think that's what we'll see out of Derek. I think we'll see a determined Derek. I think we'll see a Derek, a passionate, and he always run hard. But I think we'll see one of those Tennessee Titan angry. I wouldn't be surprised if Derek Henry wins angry runs this week.
Mm-hmm. That would be pretty cool. He's completely agree with you, by the way. I think we heard two things from Derek Henry since the third fumble occurred. Well, maybe even three, if I point to this, that really give our positive flags as far as I'm concerned. First of all, I can't take how shook he was and how upset he was with the third fumble on the bench as anything but he completely understands his own accountability for it. Now, mm-hmm. He's got to channel that and make it positive. And then I saw two other flags. The first is he doesn't avoid the microphones after a game where he has fumbles. So he completely owns up to it. The guy's as good a teammate as you could ever want just for that mm-hmm. alone. And then, you know, the next thing is he went to practice this week, and there was, I don't know if it was one day or it was a whole week. He basically carried the football the entire practice, at least one, and basically was daring everybody to try and get the ball to knock it out of his hands, because he wanted to practice holding the ball high in Tate and the multiple points of contact and whatnot. You could probably tell people more about that than I could in terms of how you're supposed to hold the football as a running back. But mm-hmm. I was just very impressed by Derek's, you know, desire to do that for an entire practice.
Yeah, it depends on how you teach. There's a bunch of different ways to do it. So whatever, you know, method he's using is fine. But I like the fact that he carried around practice the whole time, and like you said, daring people to knock it out, because that you could be at the water fountain, and if your pressure points ain't right, it can get punched out. And so that put him on alert to be on alert at all times. So if he stayed ready, he had to get ready. And that's the attitude he needs to take in the game as well. Because I did see him, you know, not completely just covering it up, but a lot of times you see him getting contact and he's running so hard that he rarely doubles over. You saw a concerned effort to double over this game, and which I'm not mad at, because you got to do that till your confidence is back, your comfortability is back, and then you can, you know, maybe go back and be the guy you were. But while you're trying to fix the problem, go back to your fundamentals.
Right.
And that's what I saw a guy do. I saw a guy go back to his fundamentals. Traffic, he covered up. When it wasn't traffic, he was his regular self. Made sure he had, you know, all his, whatever his pressure points was from what he coached. And he went back to the basics. And that's what you can ask. That's all you can ask out of a star player. I screwed up. Take accountability, like you said. Don't hide from it. You work to get better and actually show the effort that you're trying to get better.
Yeah, completely agree. All right, let's take a moment and talk about DeAndre Hopkins and what he's meant to this team so far this year. And, you know, another player does not really seem to be able to separate. And I know there's got to be some wiggle there, but whatever is there, it's very hard. They really haven't used him over the middle of the field very much. The one play that I can remember was the I guess it was the Buffalo game where they had a 3rd and 9 and he threw him a 6-yard pass crossing over the middle.
Mm-hmm.
The striking thing about that play was Lamar went over to Derrick Henry and whispered into his ear before the play, which you do not see very often with a wide receiver who's running out of the slot. You know, but most of what they've done with Hopkins has, did I say Derrick Henry? I'm sure I meant
Derrick.
But DeAndre Hopkins has mostly been on the outside this year and trying to use the sideline and mm-hmm. just, you know, Lamar is very comfortable when the safety is not around. And that's most of the time when you're on the sideline, you can throw him the football and he's going to either catch that ball, take a penalty, or not allow an interception. Those are kind of the three outcomes. So mm-hmm. he's been very good at that this year.
I've liked Hopkins' role. And I feel like once you get to the 35, that's his time to shine. And anything before that, maybe you have him in, maybe you don't, if it's, you know, less than a third down or something like that. But from the 35 in, it's his time to shine, because he's shown early in this season, if you leave him single covered, even though he's covered, he's not covered. So mm-hmm. then in turn, you have to commit a second guy over there. And that's just start to open everything else up. Because now we're back. We're back at a numbers advantage. We're back to playing 10-on-9 football if D-Hop can do that. Because like you said, he's not going to get a lot of separation. But his catch radius and his catch point and any other technical catch terms, he's still one of the masters at.
And if you're a defensive coordinator, you're playing against DeAndre Hopkins. I don't see how you can commit a second man with the other skill position problems the Ravens present. So it's basically you just got to do better at your one-on-one matchups and try to make sure that you don't have a Brandon Stevens on him where the cornerback has some problem finding the ball in the air. Because that's a guy exactly. Stevens would cover Hopkins like a blanket. But the problem is he wouldn't anticipate the ball showing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. Steven still catches strays, even though it's true.
it's not fair. Brandon, you know, was a pretty decent player for the Ravens for a while. All right, let's see. I brought up Hopkins. You got anybody else you want to talk about?
I think those other guys. I need to wait to see on Likely. Zay's been our best receiver, so I don't have much on him. And Hill is what he is. If you got one, you want to. Harp on, I'll bounce off what you had to say about him, but I'm good on the rest of them.
Yeah, I mean, I talk about him kind of every week on the show. I am, I guess, a little bit concerned more about Flowers than anybody else on how his route tree, the set of options that he has gets degraded by Cooper Rush being in the game. I don't want to see Zay go back to being a gadget player. You know, right. He did too much of that in his rookie year. You got LaJonte Wester, by the way. Get him off the bench. He played two snaps of offense this last week. I was happy to see it, but I'd like to see him playing some real offense. You got Keaton Mitchell. Get him in the game. Get him gadgeting. But you really do not need to use Zay in that way. And we saw what happened to Marquise Brown when Huntley had to go in for Lamar. And Marquise Brown became a five-yard-a-catch receiver, a five-yard-per-target receiver. So it's you know, coming back for the football, everything was underneath. That's the way you degrade a player like Flowers and his value. Mm-hmm. Obviously, most of what he's done has not been, you know, way down the field making deep catches. It's been the no other team has any answer for him crossing between level two and level three. And Lamar has tremendous comfort making that throw. Yep. I question whether or not Cooper is going to have the time to make those throws.
Whenever we change from Mark doing that route to Zay doing that route, it unlocked a certain part of our offense that we really hadn't had in a while. And it's still intermediate, but it's the deeper end of intermediate. And that means your linebackers got to cover a little deeper, which also means you got more running lanes when you want to run the ball. But him doing that is really effective. I just don't know if Cooper will have I take that back. If we do what we're supposed to do on the front end and run the ball enough, Cooper will have those same windows. It just won't be out of a traditional shotgun thing. It'll be out of maybe a play action off of under center type deal. He'll still have those same windows. And honestly, if we run it, he may even have bigger windows.
Maybe one other play that I'd point to for Cooper Rush, which is a way to manufacture time and space. I know you know this as a coach, would be to go back to some play action boot plays that they ran so frequently during the Flacco era, but really don't have the same kind of gravitas with Lamar. Mm-hmm. So just to talk about the zone blocking normally, and just the most common way, zone blocking will go left on a fake run left. The quarterback will peel out of that play action by booting to the right naked. Okay. So there's no one covering him there. So the edge defender, the backside edge defender, the impetus, the onus is on him to come downhill, get after the quarterback in his face and try and limit the damage by making him throw the short, what I call the line of scrimmage or level zero play. It usually is a tight end. And you have then a deep cross is the second level play. And you have a fly route usually on that right sideline. Joe Flacco made a lot of those plays work because nobody was really watching the back door too carefully because of who Joe Flacco is. Lamar, everybody's got their antenna already on him to start with. The radar is on. And they're going after him immediately on the play. They're too patient to fall for that. So maybe with Cooper Rush, maybe it becomes an option again.
It's something you just said really sparked a lot to show you how much of a gravity player Lamar is. Mm-hmm. You're taking a whole player that's changing what he normally does, which will help out the other people in the run game. And when you take him out, and now they can get more involved in the run game because you don't have a dynamic playmaker back there in the backfield. That's how much of a gravity player that he and a few other quarterbacks like that too are as well. But anytime you can, because you go back to it being a numbers game. So you your defensive end or whoever goes with the what doesn't go with the running play to stop Lamar, now you've got a numbers game post snap. And if you get a hat on the hat, you get big runs. Whereas if that was me, you, Joe Flacco, maybe even Cooper Rush, that defensive end gonna come down the line and maybe chase that thing down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a different game. All right, Coach, just always a pleasure to talk football with you. It's been a while since we've had the opportunity to have you on the show. Tell folks where they can find your channel and how they can contact you if they have a question about football they want to ask.
On X, you can find me at Coach Evans 9, and on all other platforms, it's Sip the Tally or Sip the Tally Films, and that's YouTube, YouTube, Instagram, and everything else. I got Sip the Tally Films.
Okay, Sip to Tally is SIP2, the number 2, and then Tally, TALLY. So it's Mississippi to Tallahassee, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
All right. Outstanding, Coach. Great to have you on again. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening in, as always. If you have a question, use hashtag Film Study Mailbag. We're always looking for more questions and comments there. If you just have a comment, I'll air it. And we may have a little bounce around afterwards about it, but I'll air it on the show and love to hear from you. Coach, thanks again for coming on.
Appreciate you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.